Welcome to the Fishing Daily Podcast with me, Oliver McBride. Today, I am joined by Mike Park from the Scottish Whitefish Producers Association. We'll be having a look back at 2022 and a look forward into 2023 and what will be happening. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning.
Mike, just mentioned there, 2022, tough year for the industry, fuel-wise, fuel cost-wise, and there's a lot of other things that happened. What was the biggest challenges that faced industry for you?
The biggest challenges, I guess, in 2022 were still the Brexit legacy issues. You know, costing more to get the fish to the continent, taking longer to get the fish to the continent. But then you had the high prices, or sort of the high cost of fuel, rather, and the reasonably high prices for the products such as nephrops and cod and the larger haddock, saithe and hake, anglers, etc. So it was a positive year in terms of the fleet grossings, but of course that was required to offset the high increase in the cost of fuel. Some of our vessels, you know, felt that really badly, especially the larger offshore vessels fishing the deeper water. The fuel consumption there is quite high, but also in the scallop sector and the other mobile sectors, generally speaking. All in all, we got through to December last year intact. There was pressures on crewing, and that exists in the 2023, which we can discuss. But there is still that sort of legacy from Brexit that, you know, we should be in a better position than we are. We're still trying to shake that off, that we were the poster boy during those Brexit discussions. And here we are, 3 years after it, almost to the day. And pretty much, other than the ideological political aspiration of saying we're a coastal state, in terms of the amount of fish we get to catch, in terms of shares, we are no better off. So that's still a negative in there that will take some years to shake off, Oliver.
That impact is going to linger on. And although the UK is giving a lot of funding and different fisheries innovations and different types of seafood funding, do you think fishing has been sort of left behind post-Brexit? Or do you think that this funding is going to be of benefit?
Yeah, we were pretty much cast aside. As I said, you know, we were seen as the poster boy of Brexit. You know, we lost tremendously when Heath took us in, and we was held up there about as with regards to this will be the industry that will benefit greatly. And of course, we now know, you know, retrospective wisdom tells us that was probably undeliverable, and it certainly wasn't delivered. So here we are. That's what it is, and we need to get on with it. Some people are still saying now, well, after 2026, that'll change. Well, in our view, you know, I don't think much will change. It'll take political will. And if the political will wasn't there in the past, I guess, you know, it'd be difficult to understand or accept that political will would be there in the future. But we need, as an industry, to continue to build. We need to fish smarter. We need to get on and do what we do better. And the key focus, I guess, has always got to be on maintaining stock sustainability and, you know, maintaining it as an attractive industry so we can actually get recruits into the industry, because we're still suffering from that. And I guess if, you know, one of the negatives of 2022 was the fact that we're seeing less and less new young men and or women coming into the sector. We just can't seem to attract them, and we need to try and find a way around that, Oliver.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that's ahead of you in 2023 and then to the future. But looking more closely at 2023, what's the challenges for the SWFPA?
There's a number of challenges. We still need to ensure that, you know, all crew are being paid a fair wage on the vessels. We need to make sure we've got the proper backup for crew in place, both home crew and non-UK crew. We need to ensure that we can help the sector transform, or certain sectors of the fishing sector transform, from the transit visa to the skilled worker route, because the government have said, you know, operating inshore with or operating within 12 mile in the transit visa will no longer be tolerated. So there was a bit of work to do to get the fleet cajoled into that area by being sponsors. So we need to make sure that we continue to do that. But even as we sit here just now, we still don't have a deal with Faroe. And because of the reduction in anglerfish, our vessels are desperately needing into Faroe this year. So we still need to get the Faroe deal over the line. And one of the negatives last year, Oliver, that I have to say is that we left, you know, thousands of ton of fish in the sea because we couldn't sell them. And the reason we couldn't sell them was that the processing sector has no filleters to fillet them. So when we talk about legacies for Brexit, going back to that discussion, that's one of the legacies from Brexit as well. There's not enough people coming into the sector. So we need to find a way to solve that problem as well. What can we do with these small fish to make it a useful product, to get it into the market, to make sure the vessels can earn a living from it? But 2023, we saw a number of the stocks increase this year in terms of opportunities. Cod was up by 63%. Haddock was up. Saithe was up. So there's a number of new fishing opportunities in there. It would be extremely useful if the price of fuel came down from where it was and the prices for the product stayed high, then we could maybe get more profit into the system and then start looking at placing new vessel orders again, because I would imagine that last year or last 2 years have perhaps made that dry up slightly, because the builds we're seeing now were put in place 3 years ago, most likely. So we need to see that profit dropping to the bottom line to get that confidence back in to start that reinvestment program again.
There seems to be a discrepancy in the science. I was speaking with a few other people in regards to this, especially in the cod, where the cod was cut and then the cod was increased. And things like that does have an effect on how you can plan the future. You said there's a lot of new vessels that coming into the fleet that was ordered 3 or 4 years ago. How is it looking for them? Are they feeling confident about the next few years?
We always talk about a fishing industry, but there's different fleet metiers there. And we've seen a lot of sort of new vessels coming in just now, larger vessels for the shelf edge in the west of Scotland. We've seen some prawn vessels coming in now as well. And there is a confidence there. You're right. But, you know, we need to make sure that this boom and bust in terms of tax setting is removed. Because the problem is that we see the fish on the ground at least a year before the science picks it up. And the tack that say allocated at the time doesn't necessarily reflect that abundance, which means that you're giving up an opportunity. And that shouldn't really happen. I mean, one of the positives last year was that through the Northern Fishing Alliance, which is a new post-Brexit group set up to allow people like me, industry leaders and fishermen, to sit around in a non-political basis to discuss issues of common concern, such as the North Sea Cod. And we have an angler group, we have a Saith group, and we're just setting up a spatial awareness group just now. You know, a lot of the work we did over the past 2 to 3 years was to try and assist the ICES and the managers in understanding actually what is out there through empirical evidence that we were inputting. And indeed, the seminar that we held with, or the workshop we held with ICES towards the end of the year, was extremely useful in trying to work out what we should be doing, sitting down with them ahead of the advice drafting groups, so that they can maybe have a clearer understanding that if we haven't taken all the TAC, for example, of haddock, it's not because they're not there. There are other commercial aspects round about it that means we can't take it out to the sea. And indeed, we're away to have another seminar after the benchmark, the COD benchmark, which is on 24th of February, I believe, in Copenhagen, to see what more industry can do to help them and the advice that they prepare and indeed the information they can gather. Because we've always said that every vessel is a research platform. We just need to find out the route and the ways that we can harvest that information and advice and get it into the science sort of systems.
The spatial squeeze. Last time on the podcast here, we're talking about how far the industry is down the line on the decision-making. Has that improved anything in the past year?
It has with certain companies and not so with others. But, you know, my role in life is to horizon scan and try and solve some of the problems coming down the track. The issue of spatial squeeze is one that we don't seem to be having much impact at the moment. And indeed, Scottish Government just announced this week about, you know, another 10% of our seas going to highly protected marine areas. There'll be no fishing in there. We now have all the offshore wind. There'll be very little mobile fishing in there, if any. We have all the cables. We have the fish farms to the west of Scotland. We have seaweed farms coming in. So what we're getting is a very congested sea space now, very, very congested. And if it all goes wrong, at the very, very best, it kind of plans an efficiency for us, because we won't have access to the best fishing grounds. We'll have to move, and then catch rates go down, catch per unit of effort goes down. And at the worst, we will just be excluded completely, which could have a long-term detriment to the sort of commercial survivability of the sector as a whole.
That's a concern because, you know, as we're talking about, the industry has to be able to plan for the future. New boats have to be paid for. And when you're not really aware of what's happening in 4 or 5 years' time, it's very difficult for anybody coming into the industry to see a clear path to, you know, to what's going to be a 10-year or 15-year career in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, you're entirely right. I mean, like any business, the fishing industry does not like uncertainty. And we have to deal with a number of uncertainties without adding to that. Like, you know, quotas, what are the quotas going to be? That's an uncertain. We are price takers, we're not price makers. That's another uncertain. The other thing is, you know, where can I fish? Normally, we get by fishing in the highest density areas, you know, because the sea is not just full of fish. As everyone knows, there's areas of the sea where fish appear, and that's changing as well through climate change. I mean, cod is moving north at a rate of something like 12 kilometers annually, or this center of catches is moving north 12 kilometers annually. So there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of movable parts of the fishing industry currently. And we are pretty resilient, but it will come to a point, or hopefully it won't come to the point, that we are planned into so much inefficiency that we find it difficult to exist. And that's the point that we are trying to get government to understand, is that you can't keep putting things in the sea without talking to us. If you are going to do it, at least put them in the areas of the sea where we don't fish. And there's a vast number of those areas, but we need to be taken seriously. And getting back to your earlier point, Oliver, is, you know, to do that, we need to be in at the earliest stages of discussion. You know, bringing us in to mark their homework isn't suitable.
Yeah, that seems to be a problem as well. And, you know, if you're looking at the science of what these offshore developers are creating, there's still a lot of uncertainty around that as well. As long-term impacts, as we know, a lot of fish doesn't always stay in one place.
No, they don't. And if you look at the NFFO-SFF joint paper on spatial squeeze, you know, some of the long-term understanding of what could be put in the sea is scary. It is absolutely scary. And there is no research going into the impact of wind farms. There's no research going into the impact of the electromagnetic fields. And we already know that brown crab, they have difficulty moving over the cables, which can disrupt their breeding and their feeding patterns. So it seems to be this rush for offshore renewables is being done without engaging the precautionary principle. Now, as fishermen, we've had to, adopt to the precautionary principle since 1999 when the EU invoked it at that time. But it seems that doesn't apply to other sectors that are now currently operating offshore, which for us is disappointing.
That's one of those situations where the industry's been asked to sacrifice a lot and change a lot. And another change that is coming along for the industry as well is the change from fossil fuel diesel engines over to more green energy engines, or some way of powering boats. And the Macduff ship design report came out. It was commissioned by the Fisheries Innovation and Sustainability Group. And they're saying that there's no time. It's too risky now not to start developing these new powers. But yet and all, it's difficult to see an alternative, especially for commercial boats that are, as you say, trawlers and dredgers that's relying heavily on diesel engines because what they're doing is heavy work.
Yeah, I mean, we as an industry, you know, we get involved in research and development about gear, more efficient gear, lighter gear. What we don't do is get into R&D on engines and combustion or fuel research or whatever. So as a sector, we will run as fast some of the big engine manufacturers develop and deliver. And that's a commitment from us that as they develop more carbon-friendly engines or different sources of power, then we will we will develop in that way and develop in that direction. But until they deliver it, there's nothing we can do. We just have to live at the pace that those things are developed. And I guess for us, that's disappointing. But the reassuring thing, Oliver, is that, you know, our carbon footprint in terms of the protein we produce is extremely low when you look at it against other sectors. So, you know, that's in our favor at the moment. That said, we do need to develop going forward in terms of continuing to reduce that. But that may be in, you know, operating lighter gears or different types of fishing. So there's a lot of things that can be done, just rather than turning from, you know, diesel engines to electric or hydrogen or whatever. So there's a number of little things we can do to improve our footprint.
Transit visa for crewing. Now, where is that within the UK Parliament at the moment?
Well, the Nationality and Borders Act came in last year, and at the end of the year, Border Force and MCA were touring certainly Northern Ireland and the west coast of Scotland down the Clyde, making the operators aware that if they were operating inside 12, they would have to send their crew home. And there is a lot of crew being sent home, and there's a lot of vessels being tied up. Now, that was on the premise that the definition of operating with the transit visa was going to be out at the end of last year. What they've held off from doing is putting that definition in at the moment, which would ultimately just rule out any operation within 12 mile with a transit visa. Currently, the wording is wholly or mainly, so there is still some scope for operating inside 12, although the Border Force have said that that still will not allow you to operate wholly inside 12. We have asked Jenrick, the minister, for an extension till next year before they implement it wholly and get our new definitions in. And that'll give the sector a time to transition, or some of the sector a time to transition from the transit visa, which bars them from operating inside 12, to the skilled worker route. Now, the issue with the skilled worker route is, one, the vessel needs to become a sponsor, which is time consuming and costly. And the other one is that to bring fishermen in through that route, they have to have the B1 CELT English exam. It's 4-part: reading, writing, speaking, listening. And it's that element that we're finding it very, very difficult to get the seamen through. Currently, within my organisation and within a subsidiary, Crew Services, we're trying to put English language courses in Manila and Philippines, and we're trying to put them in through the Maritime Institute in Accra, Ghana, to try and help the fishermen get their B1 English. But there is a dire shortage of fishermen with that level of English qualification. So that's why we have asked the Home Office to extend the period from this spring, which they pushed it back to next spring, to give us that clearer area of transition.
Losing crew, a valuable crew, would be devastating for a lot of vessels.
Yeah, and I can't talk about Northern Ireland, but I know the Clyde, and I know the west of Scotland. You know, some of these vessels are small vessels, some of them are old wooden vessels. And for them to fish nephrops outside 12, they need to go 60, 70 mile outside the islands. Now, you can just imagine how that's just not palatable in terms of safety for a number of these vessels. It seems to me that consideration is not being taken into account. We have lobbied hard, we've lobbied extensively for the last number of years, but it seems to be that no one is willing to sit up and take notice of the special circumstance that these vessels face. And as I say, you know, there's a lot of them tied to the wall now, there's a lot of them sold, so we do need to find a solution to the problem. And it would seem that the solution to the problem is the skilled worker route, but we need time to transition from where we are to there, because there is just not enough seamen to fill the gap. If we look at in Scotland alone, there's 1,450 non-UK crew. Currently, we have 9 fishermen with their B1 English qualification. So that kind of gives you a scale and proportion of it.
I suppose this also reflects on the seafood industry as well, where you need to have the processors in order for the fishermen to be able to get their product out there.
Yeah, as I said earlier, that we left thousands of tons of small fish in the sea last year, purely because the processing sector does not have the filleters to fillet it. And if they're going to use the filleters to make money, they would rather do it with the bigger fish, the higher yield, you get through them quicker rather than the small fish. And I get that completely. So there's a real dearth shortage of filleters in these factories. And they themselves, who previously were using Eastern Europeans, are now moving to the Philippine workers, Myanmar, a number of different regions that they're bringing them in from now, because they're trying to solve their own particular problem.
And do you think within Scotland itself, do you think the government is understanding this problem, and maybe are they going to create or try to create some help towards the industry to push people into the industry, or are you still working basically on your own?
Immigration is—it's not a devolved issue. It's an issue for Westminster. So that element is not devolved. Although the Scottish government has made the right noises with respect to trying to get this sorted out, but the Scottish government is also aware that there is a discrepancy in wages between home crew and non-UK crew, and they highlight that as an issue going forward as well. So yeah, I mean, there's not much the Scottish government can do other than make the right noises at Westminster, which they are doing. But this is a real problem, not so much for the east of Scotland, but it is certainly a real problem for the west of Scotland, the Clyde, and Northern Ireland.
For 2023, what would you like to see happen that, you know, realistically that you could be achieved by the end of the year?
Realistically, I'd like to see a closer relationship between the industry and the science gathering bodies. I know here in Scotland we're looking to do industry commercial surveys that would sit alongside the sort of government science institute surveys, and that would just give them some spare capacity. So hopefully we can carry that through. Hopefully in 2023 we can get the Faroe deal through by the end of February to let a number of vessels up there. Hopefully February 24th with the Cod benchmark meeting, there'll be a recognition that the cod stock in the northern end of the west of Scotland is the same as the North Sea, and we can start harvesting that rather than coming under constant pressure from the Greens that the stock is declining, it's missing, it's not there. So these are all little things that, you know, in their own right, can make a big difference to the sector. I hope we can find a solution to the transit visa issue for operating inside 12. That would just be a massive win for the sector. You know, there's a number of things out there that if it all came together, it would be a great 2023. And hopefully, you know, as we maybe talk at the end of this coming year, we can sit and look back and think, well, you know, we had all these predictions that if it came through, it'd be a good year, and it's ended up being a good year. And so I just hope that, you know, price of fuel doesn't shoot up again, because that would be a big negative for us. We hope that the French don't kick off in the channel and start making it more complicated again to get our product overseas, because that's where the high value stuff tend to go, especially the anglerfish and the hake and nephrox, etc. So there's a number of little components out there that if they all go wrong, then it causes us an issue. But if they all go right, should be a good year, Oliver. You know, I'm not into glass ball stuff, so we'll have to talk in December again and see how well it went.
Well, thank you, Mike, for joining us, and hopefully now 2023 we'll see some improvements compared to 2022.
Thank you, Oliver.